Have you
not
seen it?
Seattle
heard that there was a lot of talking in the dining hall.
Very loud.
Bad acoustics.
Okay. So how do you learn? What do you learn from your talking?
I should not talk when I'm on the
job. Better don't talk.
Yeah.
Better don't talk.
Better not to talk.
Do you more observant?
Yeah.
Or what, how you are feeling?
Where?
Yes.
Attitude will change.
Check your attitude.
You only need the word out.
Attitude with which you're speaking.
And just things that were said before the mind started thinking about what it meant would resonate with me.
Sorry.
Do you know what I mean by resonate? I could feel something, and then I would start thinking, what did that person say that. Instead of first thinking about what they said and then feeling it, I was feeling it and then thinking it.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Well, you tell the crew will be like that.
Can I say, you tell it, 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 you tell it
be aware of them.
To be also my
noisy pit was good. Noisy pit, I never counted. What was it? Good.
Okay.
I look out.
The vision is gone.
If there's awareness, it's good.
Yeah.
He says knowing what we are saying is also meaningful. Knowing that we're saying.
I think we were all talking about our practice and how
ပြောတဲ့အချိန်မှာတတိလေးရှိမယ်ပြောတာလည်းပြောတဲ့ topic ကလည်းတရားဖြစ
်
တယ်တရားဖြစ်မယ်ဆိုရင်သူပြောပြီးရင်စိတ်ကမှအရှိစိတ်ကကောင်းတဲ့စိတ်ဖြစ်မှာ
He says if we are speaking mindfully and what we're talking about is related to the Dharma he says we can come out feeling more energized because
တရားဖြစ်နိုင်တယ်တရားပေါ်မှာတရားဖြစ်နိုင်တယ်
Faith in the practice
because after discussions I can't sleep I'm so energized
Yes, right. Oh, you don't want to be here. A lot of don't want to be here. But I mean, she may not turn on any. But she got better. She didn't know the deal.
He says, if you're mindful when you're talking, mindful when you're doing everything else, then when you sit or whatever, also, you know. Momentum carries in and everything is energized.
How is it? Go for a minute. In real life,
yes.
I'm fortunate enough that I have my work allows me to have one-to-one sort of interaction with people, and I practice right speech frequently.
Yes.
Just like we did today.
Yeah.
At home, my wife, who is far more diligent
she's not here,
man. Yeah, she's much more disciplined than me.
Yeah.
She practices right speech, so I have time with her to change. You know, I've noticed a change over the years, but
yes.
You know, it's gotten better.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my 15-year-old son. It's like I'm a different person, and B, it's a different planet. And what I wanted to ask either was basically what happens is that usually when I'm interacting with people, I can see subtle or feel subtle emotions coming up. And so you have time, you know, you can look at them and hear them. But with him, we have a good relationship. but
yes.
It's like fire and anger. And by the time it's up, it's burnt me.
Mm.
So, you know, and he's the most important. So I can practice right speech with complete strangers.
Yes.
But when it comes to the one, you know,
that matters.
And it's the same with parents. It's just a, you know, it's
disaster.
It's a disaster.
Join the human race.
Right speech, He says, whenever you see your son, or think of your son, particularly when you
say
every time, and he says, do this all the time, every time. He says, notice what you're feeling when you see him. And then when you notice your feelings, you will also begin to slowly see what expectations you have of him, what desires you have for him, what your attitudes are towards him, all these things, all your your inner stuff relating to him. You will notice it, and then he said you will be able to change the ideas he said if you didn't think of him as your son but a human being.
He's not
I said I made this human being, and he said no, he said he didn't come because you called him. He didn't come. He came because of his karma.
Mm.
When his son was born. That was when he was practicing very hard in lay life. Been practicing almost 3 years, I think, by the time his son was born. He said, and they brought the baby to him. And he looked at it. He didn't think, this is my son. He thought, wow, human being has come into being.
I found it almost easier to understand what was happening in my mind while we were talking than when I'm in meditation.
Yes, it's easier because it's just when we talk, we have to think before
yes.
we talk. So it's so obvious.
Yeah. I think because we just come from sitting.
And
the contrast was stark. Yeah, just an observation.
Yeah. He says when we want to say something to anybody, he says our attitude and what we want to convey to that person. He says if we have the wrong attitude, we're going to burn it. You know, burn that conversation, the bridge. Yeah.
Our attitudes are in everything. He said if we didn't have our we have preconceived ideas, we've already made assumptions about that person, where that person is coming from and stuff like that, their motivations and stuff, we've already made assumptions, he says, and instead of doing that, if we would just come with a simple sort of attitude, like, what does this person want? He says, as parents, he says it's worse because one of the common things parents have when they speak to their children is, you've got to listen to me. Wasn't that a good baloney?
I
asked him, how is your son? And he said, he's fine. He says, everybody, his family comes to complain about his son, say he's very naughty. And but he doesn't think he's naughty, so because I was much worse. He says, so he can empathize with his son. He said his son played truant, didn't go to school. And he completely understands. He said, he can't cope with the studies, so he says, he asked his son, why didn't you go to school? And he said, and don't you, you know, get like help with this subject? And he says, it's a very difficult subject, and I just don't feel like, I don't want to go to school because I can't understand. And he said, the adults, instead of trying to find a way to help him to understand the topic, find someone to help him or something, they scold him. He said, what's the point? He says working under a wise boss is always much easier. There's more freedom. If you're under an unwise boss, he says all the subordinates, they suffer.
We have to be the wise boss.
We're not
dealing with anybody.
Kua, but wise boss we are. Yes, we should be. Now somebody scolds us and then we scold the next person. You know, we just
pattern
hit the chain reaction. He says his brother is a pharmacist in America and is telling him about the training they get to be to serve customers. So they're told, remember, they're sick, they have to part with their money, they have to buy the medication, they're feeling awful, they're not going to say anything nice to you, so just be prepared. So they're much more accepting when customers so when you've prepared yourself to accept it, it's much easier.
Yes, everything after that's a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
When they're actually nice.
Well,
everything after that's a bonus, isn't it? If you start from the worst possible scenario.
Yeah. Kua, a sozo, you know, mantai, then chana akonwa,
kaoni,
nothing else becomes, nothing else is so hard. So that's why we have to expect the worst and do our best.
Expectation.
We always do best with strangers because we have very few expectations of them, and part of it is because we already believe that we can't make them do what we want.
But
with our family, we want them to do what we want them.
Expectation and attachment.
So he says, So people who hurt us the most, of course, ultimately we hurt ourselves really at the primary level, but the people who we feel hurt us the most is always those closest to us. The closer they are, the more they can hurt us. Real strange, I mean, people who are more strangers and all that, very seldom can really hurt us. But we see our family all the time. But then we do the opposite. We're more careful and more aware with strangers, people who we don't meet. We meet once in a while. And then with people we meet all the time, we're not careful and we're not so aware. We don't think it's important for us to be mindful with them. Actually, it's most important at home.
Could it be that we take our family
for
granted and the love we don't feel all the time? We take it for granted and we don't appreciate the love that they
give us
all
the time.
Yeah.
Take for granted.
He
says, yes, that's right. We take our family for granted. For example, mothers, very often, they do something carefully with much love for the children, and the children find it
very complicated.
Parents do things for the children, and they say, "Oh, why are you late? I waited you for dinner."
The child will say,
"I didn't ask you to wait."
He says when he began practicing at home, he began to realize the little things that parents do for us. Began to feel gratitude for the things, you know, that how parents always keep their children in mind, and so on. And he really began to love them very much and appreciate all the little things that parents do because they feel for their parent, for their children. And he says then his parents would also, like, they feel it, they notice. They also appreciate the love they get in return. And he says they do more. You know, they'll sneak in little things to eat. He says we often don't know how to make people love us. When we do everything with awareness, he says, we will begin to notice these things and learn these things. He says, everything, all of it comes together. You can't miss anything if you're really doing everything with awareness.
One skillful means I've realized for myself is, especially with the people that are very close to me, we tend to have expectations and kind of know how they function.
Yeah.
And the things that happen again and again and again, that's what was the most difficult for me. I always had that idea, okay, it happens again, again.
Yeah.
Can't they learn?
Yeah.
Why does it take so long? And then I started to reflect and, well, just see what my patterns are doing and how difficult it is to actually change
it, correct.
And what arose was compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what changed the whole thing around. So I would give my mom or whoever it was actually a break and say, well, it is really difficult. And I started to actually see the little changes that did happen because I started to see them in myself. And then I could encourage her to do the same thing. Or, well, I didn't actually have to do much.
Yeah.
It just happened naturally.
He said that's really true. We're usually so self-absorbed. He says we have no time to consider what it must be like for the other person. We're so self-absorbed by what we want of the other person. We don't, like you said, notice our own failings as well. And this way, he says, when your mind is calmer, there just is more space to see other points of view. So initially we're so caught up in our own reactions, or like you said, again, and it just agitates the mind and we believe in it and we're so caught up in it. But once there is a bit of an ability to step away from it and ask how you could do it differently, then there's more calmness you can see. He says the nature of wisdom is always to be able to see both sides of the coin. Never just one side, always realizing there's another face to every situation. Not just their side, their view and my view, but also past, present, future.
But because the mind has its patterns we don't actually question. We just think, oh, it's as it was all the time.
Yes.
And it was the same for me with metta. When I started to practice it myself and to get a feeling for it, I actually started to watch the people that I was around before.
Yeah.
And I started to see that soft part in them.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that they didn't change. It was just my
view
that changed so that I could perceive those little things of kindness and softness that were always
there.
post to come in, manage it, doing my land. But yeah, I don't think I'm a total. I mean, it's a good matter. I feel it. It's easy to do. You are a good work. You can't all take my better hand to me. To the people, I don't know. Me, but then you know. I mean, I saw your name. I'll be the guy who I don't have. She's the name of my work. I didn't jump on the number two by the two party, killing land or teach that deal. I call him my father. I'm a bit out of the same people.
He says when he was in Korea, he there was a lady who came to see him, and both the parents, the lady and her husband, they couldn't see, they were very negative about their own daughter, viewed her very negatively. And she didn't tell the teacher about this, but, you know, in giving his talks and all that, she remembered one thing that he said. He said, see it as it is, to see things as they are. And she took that home with her. And she said she tested it, you know. And in Burmese, it's very interesting to tete is to see it straight, see it as it is. Tete is to put in something and see it. So put in your view and see it. And so it sounds quite sexy in Burmese. Anyway, so she went home and she decided to stop looking at, to try to not see her daughter as she always has, like with her expectation of what she's going to do next, And she decided to just observe her to see what she was doing. And then she saw it differently. She saw things differently, realized it wasn't everything she thought. And then both the parents started to, you know, do this together, and it became a much better relationship.
Yeah. I had that one quite nice experience. I was a teacher before, mm-hmm. and one kid just had trouble at school. Or it was difficult for her to learn the stuff that was being taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tried to be helpful,
mm-hmm.
but I realized that there was a lot of pressure also involved in being helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, when she was doing something, I just turned around and said, "That's difficult for you, isn't it?" And that just broke the ice. And she said, "Yes, it is difficult for me." And from that moment on, it wasn't that kind of pressure in trying to help anymore.
So they don't feel like you pity them or something like that.
Well, it was just actually was what you were saying, acknowledging as it is. I was always expecting her to
be
better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at that moment where I turned around and said, "That's difficult for you."
Yeah.
And she could say, "Yes, it is."
And
the whole pressure, everything was gone.
Yeah. So somebody to understand them, to just see their point of view.
Can you say some techniques when you're dealing with people who are negative? Tell some advice for me not to deal with that person.
Sorry, what?
Oh, yeah.
Always the cup is half empty.
Yeah, so understand their point of view. This is what they've always done. This is what they know how to do. They don't have the wisdom to do more than that. So this is their nature, let them be. If they understood, they wouldn't complain. Right now they're in pain. They are in pain.
Suffering.
They are
suffering.
Yeah,
already.
Yeah. Yeah, people who are unhappy always complain. When they are happy, they will see the positive side.
Expectation that makes us suffer, because we want
them to be positive. What rule count is, you know, go up piano
kayan.
Which means we are not accepting and we cannot understand them. Yeah, we don't give them our understanding.
So
understand someone else, he says we have to understand ourselves. Then we can easily understand that another person has. He says, like in a family, if everybody was practicing the Dhamma, he said, well, be quite peaceful. Because everybody just watches their own mind. But every good thing in life has its price. We have to work to earn it. So it won't come just instantly. You have to work for it, work towards it. Yes?
I make my living as a psychotherapist, and one of the things that most strikes me is how naturally human minds generate an opinion about others. It just seems almost biological.
We don't know anything about this person, or we already have an opinion.
Good or bad, something.
Whether good or bad. But it's delusion because we don't know anything. We just make an assumption or an opinion. That's why he says, you know, every time we see something, or, you know, what is the mind thinking? Every time we experience something, what is the mind think? That's a lot of it is delusion at work.
I had a young client who he'd been to some training thing, and they said to him, be 100% responsible for your own emotions. And
emotions?
Yes. For your reactions to other people. And it went home. That's one of the things that's really striking me, is why does something go in? He said that day. I probably heard it before, but on that day, it landed.
For you?
For me.
Yes.
And I took that on. Not that I can do it perfectly, but that commitment then happened.
Correct.
I'm puzzled by that. Why does something... Why do... It's like luck.
Conditions.
He
says many conditions must come together, yes?
Yeah.
And there's a gathering of conditions, and also possibly, he says, in the immediate present, he says conditions like being calm, paying attention, being open, because you're talking to someone, you know, who's, I don't know, was he? I don't know who you're speaking to.
A client, yeah.
Yeah, a client. Mm-hmm. So all those conditions are present, and therefore you are most receptive as well. So we are most accepting when our mood is ready.
Yes.
Yeah, when we are in the right space. Yeah. We may come across an idea or a concept many, many times, but when we're not in the right frame of mind then, or not receptive to it for some reason,
Siddhartha says,
like for him, he, you know, we smell things almost daily. We take it for granted. We smell them. The day he had an insight into the nature of smell, he was shocked. He smelled
Object is very simple, but understanding very deep. Because of my sticker,
He said that day as usual, he'd been practicing daily, and then that whole day he'd been practicing. He went home to take a shower. At that point he wasn't trying to practice, but he was calm, he was receptive. He took the soap, he smelled it, and suddenly it hit him.
Why the smell can know the nose?
For him, at that point, the strong understanding that this is a cause and effect relationship, and this is the only way it will be. The anatta nature of it just hit him so hard.
Yeah,
he was speechless. And you know, he wasn't speechless. He was so amazed. After his shower, he went around, said to his brothers, "Do you know we can only smell with your nose?"
He went to tell
his teacher about it. The teacher said, "When you understand things, don't go and tell everybody. They don't understand. They think you're crazy. Why is it so amazing?" He says, "We all know that we can only smell with our nose. We all know that. But the level of understanding it is..." Sorry. Yeah, it's just... So he says, the objects that we experience are always the same, the six sense objects, always the same. He says, but when the mind is ready and it realizes something, he says, then that's when...
Sorry, Siaga, is that because the taste of the smell of the mind is so intermixed with the smell of the nose?
Smell of the mind?
Yeah. The mind puts the smell on everything because it puts the taste on everything.
Actually, right?
You know, it's hard to separate the two out.
Are you talking about the process of the insight or...
No, because the mind is behind all of the five senses.
Yeah.
So sometimes we don't distinguish it carefully because we don't see the nose and the mind separately, or the sense base and the...
It's only when it works naturally, you know, the wisdom, the awareness, and all, when they work naturally. So you might try to do that artificially, like separate them, and all, but the understanding will not arise. But when the mind is ready, it will, all this will naturally be can. So in Vipassana, he said, never think, how could I observe it so an insight can arise? It will never work. He says, you know, we hear people talking about their experiences, what they understood, what they did, and all this sort of thing. He said he's tried it all when he was young. He tried everything he heard of, and he got it. He got it all. He said, but it's all false. Because the mind just imagines it up.
So, yeah, this, you know, 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 this, you
mind is simple, clear, no greed, not trying to get anything, then understanding. Yeah.
When we're talking about mind, and then he's talking about the senses, and what, like, where, with the name for it is brain, or what?
Mind, heart, mind.
ဟုတ်ကဲ့ပြီးတော့မှာဖြစ်ကိုဘယ်မှာဖြစ်လဲဆိုတော့ဒီဟာလေးဝတ္ထုမှာမြည်တယ်လို့ပြောတယ်အဲ့လိုပြီးတော့မှာနာမ်မှာလာတာလို့ပြောတယ်အဲ့ဟာလေးဝတ္ထုလို့ဘုံနေဒီမှာပဲဖြစ်တာနေတာဒါဒီပေါ်မှာပဲမြည်ဖြစ်ရတာစေဟာလေးဝတ္ထုမှာမြည်ဖြစ်သူ့နေရာလို့ပြောလို့ပြောတယ်အဲ့တော့သူအဲ့လိုဒီမှာယူလိုက်တာဘာလို့ပြည့်လဲဆိုတော့ငင်းစရာမရှိဘူးသူကငင်းနေအုံနောက်မှာရှိတယ်ဟာ
the Buddha Dharma, it says the mind arises at the heart base, the Hadeyabhattu, literally translated heart base. In Asian languages, the heart and mind is the same word very often. So whether it arises out of the heart or the brain. So there's an Abhidhamma teacher in Burma who says, maybe the heart base is in the brain as well. I mean, the Buddha never said a place. He just said heart base. He said Hadeyabhattu, you know, which he translates as heart base. But we feel sometimes like the mind is our heart and sometimes the mind is our brain.
Yes.
So maybe it's
doesn't matter.
So long as we know it's the mind.
Yeah.
Because when you, you know, people who have brain operations of the brain, some people's personalities change because of operations of the brain. So obviously, some part of the mind functions through the brain.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, isn't it? Because we talk about separating thoughts and feelings, but in fact, if you separate,
it's all in the mind.
If they're, yeah, they're all in the one place.
Yeah.
That, not that there is
a place.
I mean,
yes.
Place,
thoughts and feelings are in the
but
mind.
Thoughts and feelings. I mean, we separate them conceptually, but in a sense, they're one thing, aren't they? So when he says that, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. They're different natures.
I mean, we have ten feelings of the mind.
But people think feelings are here, thoughts are here. This is our
normal.
We conceptualize our experience.
That's a handy way to keep them separated, isn't it?
I'm not going to keep them separated. When you get the little they must show up.
Because it's a theory that you have a thought and then you have a feeling.
You have a thought. Mostly we feel because of the thoughts.
Yeah.
But about neutral feeling.
When we have no thoughts at all, generally we feel neutral.
Mm.
Can I ask a question about subtle thoughts? Like today when I was speaking, I had some judgments, and I noticed a separation when I had that judgment. And then on reflection, I noticed that there was a subtle disappointment in myself for having the judgment. And I've been really trying to notice the subtle, like not trying, sometimes they just... And
you notice.
Or the mind notices,
yeah,
that there might just be a flash, like a little tiny image, and then I'm feeling or pain, or that something has become gross,
yeah,
but it's like almost like you've just seen something out the corner of your eye. I guess my question is, do I just keep watching? Because often I see it afterwards, I can trace back and go, where did that thought come from, that thought? And is that okay to sort of do a little bit of tracing back in the initial learning?
Do a judgment,
You can definitely do that. Mm-hmm. Yes. And he wants to add something, just for everyone's benefit. He was saying, we often are pleased, we often, in fact, naturally, we feel pleased with what we experience, we feel upset with what we experience, we disappointed that we were judgmental, you know. He says, we forget that we were aware of all this.
Aware of what? Me?
We forget the awareness. It's because we are aware that we notice
all
this. We should be happy that we were aware. Why do we not appreciate that we were aware?
Awareness is enough.
That's why he really wants us to know the awareness, because that's when we appreciate awareness, and it's really important to appreciate awareness. All defilements, attention is out there with the objects. They just look at the objects and then make judgments. He says when he was young, when he was little, when he's starting to meditate, he remembers this. His Siara said to him, whatever you know, just be happy you knew it. And that stayed with him. He's so lucky. Yeah. But you know, he had so much faith in his teacher, you know, he would know something. He doesn't understand anything about the thing. Yeah, he's so happy because he knows it. But he says it's in the years that he really, you know, practiced hard that he began to truly appreciate the meaning of what his teacher taught him. Because the knowing the awareness is already, there's wisdom because we have brought attention to something. It's real. We're knowing what it is as it is, and it's wholesome.
Knowing, understanding,
So from a young age, he's very, you know, intimate with these terms, knowing and understanding, and to just appreciate that. Mostly when we see negativities in our own minds, we feel disappointed. We feel upset. He has yogis come and say to him, I'm not like this at home. I come to the center and I'm so angry. There's jealousy.
Many bad things.
There are many bad things in my mind. I don't want to be like this. I'm not like this. Yeah. But the meaning is they don't want to know. They don't want to know that there's negativity in the mind. You know, they want to just live in the delusion that they are fine. He said, but that's crazy. It's madness to want to live in the delusion that I'm okay and I have no defilements.
Are you sure your technique is to purify your mind?
He says in his last retreat in Melbourne, you know, in 2008, one lady came and asked me, he said, are you sure your technique is to purify the mind? Because when she looked at her mind, all she saw was the negativity is presenting themselves. Before she practiced Anapana, and of course she feels a bit of peace and all that, and she thinks that's purified her mind. And then once she turned and looked back at the mind and saw all the things that were there, then she's like, this practice is not purified my mind. And when the lady asked him this question, he said, then it became very clear in his head that, yes, this practice will purify the mind because you are fulfilling the cause for wisdom to arise. You're bringing in awareness, and awareness will be the cause for wisdom to arise, which will purify the mind. So he was very sure that, yes. He asked her, do you want to live with the delusion that your mind is okay, or you really want to know what's in the mind? The mind of your mind.
And then those little nasties appear. Sorry? Then you start observing those little nasties that you rather not see. Just being aware, not trying to do anything with them. Just
Hello, Makamna se debolain, Arokua. He says very few people realize that knowing what is bad is bad is wisdom. Understanding, right understanding.
I think it boils down to one simple term that was in Xiao's book,
yes.
Dharma,
yes.
That mindfulness is looking in to yourself,
yes.
Because every time we're looking out at others,
yeah.
It's like holding a mirror in front of us,
yeah.
And mindfulness is looking at us.
Because yeah.
Very often we don't see ourselves unless there's a mirror.
Yeah.
We're always looking at others.
Yeah.
So I think mindfulness is looking at us and seeing our negativities
and positivities
and positive effects,
yes.
All the our own qualities,
yes.
And then trying to be aware to change them,
to learn about them,
the process of gaining wisdom. Once we can be able to turn it around, turn the bad qualities into wholesome qualities.
We first need to recognize and understand that what is unwholesome is unwholesome. And only when we fully understand it's unwholesome, the mind will want to clean it. Only if we know it's dirty, we will clean it. Then it will be clean. We don't even know it's dirty. This is the problem. Yeah, his teacher always said, knowing that, beginning to know that you are not perfect, is getting closer. But to think, you know, that you know we are imperfect, and to think that we are okay, he says that there's something wrong.
He says,
say a person knows everything about himself, knows everything positive about himself, honestly, knows everything negative about himself, honestly. He said that if somebody comes and praises him, he will not easily be led. If somebody criticizes him, he will not easily be disappointed.
And my name is Tigger, you are very good, you are very, very good. you are very well.
Get depressed.
Okay. I know what I'm good.
Matita, so he says it's bad not to know.
But Master Gassi, Matita, so I. Matila,
in Burmese there's a saying, to not know is so bad.
Now Mati, can
they also say if you don't know,
difficult.
Life will be difficult.
Yeah.
Translating
directly
is difficult.
If you know, easy.
If you know Burmese, it's easy.
There's a big difference between recognizing an unwholesome thought or emotion or whatever,
and realizing it's unwholesome.
Yeah. So and the subtle. So it's, you can recognize that you have wholesome activity in your brain. You can recognize you have unwholesome, but then you have to sort of. Just the next step for it to actually change is out of one's control.
Yeah, is practice. Tua, se o se kama kili da mohi kudo pi manti da ne kili da lo de bao pao da.
Matu.
Ero, dame kili da man. Tirane who the ball bow loach, Nyanga shime a yaw port, but a dark or tail me out. Yes, only practice can get you there. All you can do is practice.
No, 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 no,
no,
no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no,
he says, yeah, we use the word knowing for everything, for understanding as well. And like you said, just recognizing this is an unwholesome mind, that's just our ordinary understanding. But then understanding that more deeply that this nature is unwholesome. So, I can't say it in words. Just try and convey it to you. You know, to truly realize, you know, this is unwholesome, where the realization allows the mind to want to give it up, you know. Not from an aversive point of view, but just to like, yes, it's ready to give it up, so it will start working towards that. You know, that's another level of understanding, right, which will then lead you to practice.
Recognize and realize.
Recognize
and realization.
So
you have to give it up personally, that's how it's claimed.
No, it's not you, so you can't give it up personally. When you try to give it up personally, you always get in your way. Sorry, I'm answering the question.
You'll be it's not you answering the
question. So if you're only when there's understanding in the mind that will allow the relinquishment of the unwholesome. He says it's like us knowing that anger is not good. But why do we get angry again and again? Because that's not that deep. The realization of its destructive, of its nature, is not deep enough for us to really, for the mind to really want
to.
So the understanding, the power of the understanding and the power of the defilement are not matched. The defilement's power is much stronger right now. Our understanding is weak. So the defilement gets its way much more often.
Mm.
my brain likes conceptualization, so I apologize. But if you, if unwholesome and wholesome, the, at the gross level,
yes.
we know, like, if I take a hammer and I hit myself on the head, it hurts. It's very obvious unwholesome activity. As where it becomes much more complicated, and just tell me if you think this is a, it's pointless actually, but I'll continue because I've started. unwholesome and unwholesome, if you imagine a V like this, you've got the really gross ones. As they become subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler, there comes a point towards the bottom where it's almost that unity where wholesome and unwholesome are so subtly different that for us, certainly me at this stage, I can't understand why it isn't wholesome. And is it that the ultimately it's that unity point where there isn't really wholesome and unwholesome. There is no difference. Where the subtlety, where it becomes almost no difference.
There is a difference.
But there's a point.
But you don't know the difference.
No. There's the difference between unwholesome and wholesome.
Yeah.
Gets subtler and subtler.
Because
the gross ones are, most people know that if they do, if you kill a person, most people will feel terrible.
Can you tell me an example of a subtle?
No. Okay, I will. Liking the taste of something.
Yeah.
Liking the taste of something.
Yeah.
Versus not really, well, versus the unwholesome of not liking the taste of something.
That's quite gross.
Okay. Or experiencing pleasure out of seeing a sunrise.
Okay, getting subtler, maybe. I don't know. Ask him. Yeah.
It's,
so, yes, okay, I see that where we can't decide anymore whether that's wholesome or unwholesome.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an experience, but
yes.
Which gives you something, but it's not clearly.
Okay,
clear.
Cool. Not clear for us, yes. Tu abbiore. Abbiore. Ko chanyam ma aro kudo akudo kwe ni de dabe bi lo ko sin sa yin ne kudo akudo ri ya tengwe la bu lo de naw song ne ayan tengwe de nyam ma kudo ne akudo ha
kriya se kriya yi han ma nyam ya a kaw ne lu ma ma phit la kriya se kudo le mho akudo lu ma kriya ma shi ai se myin shi de dabe lo ayan nyam kaw nyam ayan a phit da le lu li ma phit la tan pa kudo san ni ma lo ma phit la kudo wo akudo da
dabe ဒီလိုရိုးရိုးလူတွေအတွက်သူတို့ဒီလိုရှိတယ်ဥပမာ
မြင်နိုင်တဲ့ဟာတင်ပြမှုတွေမှာဖြစ်နေတာအဲ့ဒါဟုတ်ပါသူ
ပြောတယ
်
နေတက်
တဲ့ဒီဘောပါဘူးလားအဲ့တော့
အဲ့တော့သူကသိကျင်တယ်ဒီဟာလေးမှာဘလို့နေတက်တယ်လှတယ်ကိုကြိုက်တယ်ဒါပေမဲ့ဒီဟာကုသလားကုသအဲ့လိုမျိုးခွဲလို့ခက
်မခက်မခွဲနဲ့တခုခုဖြစ်တယ်လို့ပဲယူတယ်ဟုတ
်ကဲ
့စိတ်ဖြစ်တယ်လို့ပဲယူတယ်ဟုတ်ကဲ
့ so theoretically there's a set of minds called kiriya mind, kiriya chitta. They're functional minds. Functional minds are not possible for us. We only have defiled minds or
wholesome or unwholesome.
Wholesome or unwholesome minds. Yeah. Generally, for us, we just have wholesome or unwholesome minds. We don't have functional minds. Functional minds happen to those who are enlightened. They might say they need something. So, for example, when we don't have a judgment towards something, that might be very close to a functional mind, or something like that. But anyway, that's theoretically. But he says, for us, and your example of the sun rising, and whether that's unwholesome or wholesome, he said, if we don't know, just don't bother separating it. Just, this is an experience. The sun rises, I feel like this, this is the feeling, that's it.
Let's come to the sunrise again, because you're an ordinary person, and not a real Buddhist practitioner, would enjoy a sunrise and a sunset.
Yeah.
But when you go to all these retreats and all the talks, they say essential pleasure.
Uh-huh.
So we're not supposed to enjoy. Once upon, but it's sensual pleasure, so it's not, because I've been told by a Seattle, you know. When I was in one of the retreats, I was sitting, was standing and enjoying my pleasure, and I was told not
to do it.
Yes, because it's sensual pleasure.
Okay.
And it's, you know, so that was what it is, but to me, it gives me that peace, whatever, you know. So, that's what you see.
Yes.
It's wholesome or unwholesome.
Right.
เออว่าดูดิจังแต่คําเอสบีเอสมาอ่ะครับก็เสียยังก้าวเลยใช่มั้ยก็มีทรัพย์อ่ะยังสิบ่สิกูว่าแต่มันมูดว่าบิวเลยเออตอนตรงเส้นเออบ่เอ้ยบิวมูดอ่ะอืมกรีนติดตรงตรงเส้นมูดอ่ะนะเส้นสูงเนี่ยก็ยังต้องคันซะอยู่ต้องอ้าบ่าบิวเลยดูว่าคันเนี่ยเท่าล่ะเสียน่ะเนี่ยยากตู้พาเพื่อนเอาเลยอ่ะ
เออโอเคเออตู้ตู้เข้าในเนี่ยผิดเลยเนาะตัวอ่ะมันคันซ้าอยู่ตัวโหต้องกลับใจอยู่ๆบนเตียนี่บาดนี่อ่ะไม่ถูกแล้วลูกจ๋าเนาะดิโลหล่าอะไรเอาตะบาไว้ไปสวยหล่าหล่าคันซ้าหมดเออตัวก็เลยเอาโหลเวนีนี่แตกแล้วตัวไล่ๆไปต่ายอ่ะเนี่ยเอ้อสะคันตะคู่มาเสียตัวเดียวก็ตัวด่าอะกูโดกำกำกำกำซ่าอ่ะสรุปว่ามันลบออกหลุตัวบอกเลยแต่แม้อู้เสียก็มันลบออกหลุไม่เปียวโนผิดๆมันติดหลุบอกเลยโอเคโซเออแล้วมันลบหลุยังนะผิด So he said, yes, the Buddha Dharma says that all this is sensual pleasure, but he says we can't stop it. We can't stop the mind from enjoying. And what he teaches is not to stop the mind from, you know, but to recognize this is what the mind is doing. Because for us, this practice is to recognize what is happening and observe it so that we understand it. We learn about what enjoying mind is like, what it, you know, stuff like that. Okay, so that's what he was talking about. He was in SBS, Taiping in Malaysia, and he had gone there and he was doing his own retreat. And so he'd gained quite a lot of momentum, and he was very much into his awareness of object and knowing mind, object and knowing mind. And he was really into this space for days, got quite a lot of momentum. And then it rained one night. It rained and you know, the whole forest surrounding that place, all the trees were so green, and this monk came up the mountain to his kuti. It's like, it's so beautiful, Sierra, it's so beautiful. And Sierra came out of his kuti. He said he couldn't understand what the man was talking about. He just couldn't. He couldn't.
Wow, beautiful is life.
He was looking to see what was beautiful. He couldn't give himself over to that. He couldn't, because the mind was just being aware. It wasn't giving meaning and doing all the fun things he could see it all. He could see it, but that was just it was just seeing. He was a bit bewildered for a while. Sorry.
So is that how we should react then?
No.
If that is the case.
There is no
should. The sunrise or the sunset.
There is no should.
Yeah.
As it is.
Yeah.
Love so got an
error. Yeah, Abumamuzi.
What
your depends on your understanding level.
Just whatever happens naturally. That's what happened for him then.
Okay.
But tomorrow, if he looked at the sun, he might
maybe
say it was
beautiful.
Yes. So
was that week? Then it came. Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
I was going to say it was good to have it raining during the sitting this afternoon.
Yeah.
Gave me something to focus on.
Focus on. Did you boy on account there? I don't say for the
Can I give an example of like enjoying something, and then I was at the little waterfall and the little Japanese one, and I just was, it was pleasant and nice. I was watching the water and it was all lovely, and then the mind suddenly went, that's how I want my garden. I want that in my garden. I don't want the pile of leaves and all the rubbish, and that was suffering. The first bit was okay, but as soon as I
but the mind attached, yeah. And then the story was.
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So is that a difference that we can? I mean, I sort of identify that one was it was pleasure, but it wasn't,
yeah.
And the other was, no, I'm suffering because I want this. I'm needy for this.
Yeah. Well, Oma, Ame. ဒီလိုမဟုတ်ပါဘူးခါလေးလည်းမသိဘူးရေလေးဒီလေးစမ်းကြောင်းစမ်းကြောင်းမေးလို့ဟုတ်ရှင်ပါကျွန်မဟိုဟာရှိရပညာလေးရှိရင်ကြာတယ်အေးကြာတယ်ဟုတ်တယ်ရေကျွန်တော်ဘာပဲလဲရေကျွန်တော်ဒီနားမှာဒီဟိုဟာကာလေးဩဩဩဩဩဩရေကျွန်တော်အဲ့တော့အဲ့တော့အဲ့ဒါလေးကိုကြည့်ပြီးတော့သဘောကျတယ်ခံစားလို့ကောင်းတယ်ဒါပေမဲ့ကြည့်ရင်ကြည့်နေရုတ်တရက်ကြီးစိတ်ကတော့
ဒါသူအဲ့ဒါလေးကိုကြည့်ပြီးတော့သဘောကျတယ်ခံစားလို့ကောင်းတယ်ဒါပေမဲ့ကြည့်ရင်ကြည့်နေရုတ်တရက်ကြီးစိတ်ကတော့ဒါသူ့ခြံထဲမှာဒါလို့ရောက်မယ်တဲ့သူ့ခြံထဲအိုးတိရချောင်းပြီးပါတယ်မလို့ရှင်နဲ့ဒီတိုင်းလေးပဲလို့အဲ့မှာသူကဒုက္ခရောက်လာအောင်လေအဲ့မှာဆာဖရင်ကဝင်လာမှာစကွာလို့ရှင်တယ်အခုနောက်မှာခံစားနေတာပဲရှိတယ်ပေါ့အခုကလို့ရှင်တယ်အဲ့လိုသူတတိထားမိတယ်ပဲကွဲတယ်ဆိ
So that was an observation. Sierra said he went to when he went to America, he went to the
museum,
Metropolitan Museum of Arts, and they had a Zen area, an area with Zen stuff. And then he passed this black stone. It was black marble, very black. It was square, and they had water running over it. But so gently that you couldn't see the water flowing. You could hear the water as it fell over the sides. And as he looked at it, the only thing he could think of, because it was Zen, he said, this is an art piece showing samadhi. He said, this is movement, but still. So that's how the mind is. You know, it's always that. It's always in flux, it's always flowing. It's very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm. I've been practicing the last time since watching the mind, and I've been seeing more and more of the
defilement.
Yes, and it can get quite
happy.
I was getting quite low because I never thought of myself as having jealousy, but I could see
this is
really happening.
So I sometimes have to say, look back and say, look, I've got a lot of good things happening as well.
It was not a dog
wrong.
He says the wrong view that it's my I am jealous. That is what makes you feel down. So must see that differently.
We start to see very subtle things like when too many flies get into the house. Like
the what?
Too many flies. Then I started to notice that I was kind of like enjoying catching them. You know, it was a very subtle thing.
Right.
Very
how
subtle.
Not
quite cruelty. It was, you know, once I caught that, I thought, you know, I have to just watch. Not wanting to
catch them.
Catch them, but knowing that that's like the fisherman likes to hook the fish, so the feeling.
Yeah.
You know, there's some kind of pleasure in the catching.
Look how bad. What? Pancho Dao, what enough? Chai la rao to allow the time as a
period.
There's a monk in Burma.
He
was watching his mind. Mosquito came and bit him. And he was, you know, quite good at watching his mind, so he watched it, he felt backed
up.
He didn't feel any anger. He even said, you know, please have my blood, you know, I turn on my blood to you, you know, so you don't have any defile, I mean, you don't get any
akusala.
Be happy, peaceful, and get
and
into
the,
a better
the
life.
Mosquito become fatter and fatter.
Yes, the mosquito became fatter and fatter.
And mosquito full, then he fly, he flew. Then he caught the spider man.
Right.
Then he realized before he is anger. But I'm sure he cannot see. Very subtle.
Yeah, that's the subtle example that unwholesome and unwholesome.
Yeah.
He was
looked
watching.
Very clearly, very carefully, he looked, but he cannot see.
And the reason he couldn't see was because he wasn't looking simply. He was doing all. He was busy giving dana and having
time. So not open. If you want to really want to see what is really, don't put anything. Just open. Really, did you still have the anger or not?
I thought today that you've been talking about greed on retreat. And it seemed to me today that it might be so pervasive that I can't see it because I'm just taking it for granted in some way.
Can't see
wanting the wanting something from the retreat, the trying to get something, is so pervasive that I'm not noticing it. I just begin to.
To pure, you see, the shenom the deeper, no, yogi or the. Sakawina, Bama Lujina Ho, Yao Lutam Ho, Damele, Tubulu Naleles, or Loba Yapa, Long Pong Tales, or two Mamiya.
Yes.
A good one, and they gave me love.
I love you.
That's why he said, you know, for long term meditators, the biggest enemy to watch out for is greed.
Yes.
He says, there's always something that the mind has set its sight upon,
right.
That greed has set its sights upon, and is waiting. It's like, until I get that, you know. He says it's our nature. When we set out to do something, we think we must get something from it.
It seems, I think it feels like it's impossible to renounce it, as it were, the wanting, because I want it. I don't want to renounce it.
He said this is just the beginning, and all you want to do is recognize it. Yeah. So just keep.
Just recognize.
Yeah.
Mm. Earlier on, we were talking about feelings, and this man here said that one of his clients came to him and said about owning his own feelings and accepting responsibility.
100% of your emotions, yes.
Yeah. All right?
Yes.
So then what we're saying here, that when this lady said, well, she has jealousy.
Yes.
And then he said, well, it's not yours.
Okay, let me...
No, yours, not personal.
Okay, the method pure and we are. So we can't marry the two. Sienna will explain it. Tu pure, no? I'm going to do a pure. So, very simple. What he said about jealousy is right. Any emotion that arises in the mind is not my emotion. It is an emotion that has arisen in the mind. But what he said about the 100% is also true. Any emotion that arises in the mind is 100% the responsibility of this mind. This mind has created the conditions for this emotion to arise with its views, its thoughts, its attitudes and ideas. So it's all its own greed and whatever. So it's all held in this mind in the past. it has gone through something that has resulted in this. And that's how
it's
100%
that mind's responsibility.
But the reason we use the word I is because, well, when we can only deal with this mind, right? This mind is our responsibility, so to speak. And in all human relationships, the tendency of us naturally, when we get upset, we have a relationship and we're upset, we blame the other person for what we feel. At least half. We want to be
angry.
Yes.
Angry.
Yeah.
He made me angry.
We say these things. He hurt me. He made me angry. She, she did that, you know, and so on. So we feel that people are the situations, you know, this is so frustrating, you know, and so on. So we think it's the outside that makes us feel the things we feel. But actually, the reason why we feel the things we feel is because of our judgments, opinions, preconceived ideas,
etc.
Yeah, because of the lack of wisdom and inability to think in the right way, we suffer the emotions that we have to suffer. So we see the gross level. So we see someone come and call us a fool, and we get angry. So we say, this person made me angry. But we don't see the subtle thought process that goes on, you know, the identification with the self, the pride that doesn't want to be called a fool, and all that, which makes this mind angry. But that's what makes the mind angry, not that person calling you a fool. So we don't have this sort of knowledge, we don't have this sort of understanding, we don't have that understanding in our own, you know, in our own logic, so then most situations we just attribute it to everybody else or every other thing. And so we don't take responsibility for our own emotions.
So the
lack in this mind is the lack of understanding. That is the fault that lies within the mind, that it lacks understanding of its own processes. So in fact, although we spoke about, you know, my mind is 100% responsible for my emotions, I mean, the use of I, me, my mind and myself is just a reference to this mind.
And these qualities are just part of nature.
Yes, every mind has all these qualities.
I created the conditions for it to arise.
I did not create the conditions.
The conditions were created for this particular.
Yes.
To take
responsibility.
You know, for the Theravada, what they call the stream enterer, right? The Sotapanna, the one who is enlightened and is definitely going to be reached Nirvana. For the stream enterer, he says the defilements are not all gone.
Yeah.
The defilements are still present. But the stream enterer no longer has the wrong view of what the defilements are. They are just qualities of the mind. And because of that understanding, the defilements' power is much lessened because it doesn't have a whole the defilements can never grow to a degree that would cause a stream enterer to do something that would cause a person to go to the four world states, you know, to become an animal or a hell being or whatever. So the first level is not to get rid of the defilements. you can see from the stream manager, the first level is to have right view. Is to first have right view. Producing developments happens with it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
In this day and age, we have a lot of teachings from different teachings.
Yeah.
And we have, and we also have the Buddhist scriptures as well.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, why is it so difficult for people to attain anything in Buddhism? Stream winning, once returning, non-returning, and arahant, or even, you know, peaceful states of mind. So just wondering what side of Mutation is opinion.
Bodhabanda, Tiyari, Amyonyo, Temi Jare. Pacho, to Kuku, Bodhabanda, Mayabo, the Gay, who are what? Our practice is weak.
But we have so many teachings out there to teach us
about
these defilements.
There's nothing wrong with
so many
teachings.
But it's the person who practices.
But shouldn't that make it easier for us?
No, it just depends on your practice. For us to first we have to find the suitable practice for us. Then we have to do it dedicatedly, persistently, consistently. You cannot underestimate persistence and dedication. He says because the mind arises and passes away, that persistence and dedication is absolutely necessary. But the defilement the power of the defilements, the legacy of the defilements is so strong in the mind. So arising and passing away, the legacy that keeps getting passed on mind to mind is the strong power of the defilements. And we're just trying to build that one tiny bit of
awareness
at a time. He says, one day, just one day, if you can maintain a whole day where when you look back on the day, the balance of wholesome mind states in that day was greater than the balance of unwholesome states, see the difference in what you feel.
But then it gets depressing if nothing happens, you know, when you're practicing.
He says we will only get as much as we put in. He said in the Buddha's time, he says, the Buddha was the perfect teacher.
Perfect teacher.
And everybody who he was destined to meet had all made wishes to have fulfilled their perfections so that when they got to the Buddha, it was like that. Okay? So they worked very hard already. They already put in all the homework. He says then the age after the Buddha is decaying age or whatever, you know, it's getting worse and worse. There's nobody that good anymore. He says all the seniors are gone. He says only the rest of us are left. He says our wisdom is weak, our defilements are strong, and we don't practice all the time. He says sometimes he really doesn't want to just say it like this to the yogis because it is depressing. We can get depressed thinking of it that way. We mustn't think of it that way.
Yeah, he mentioned the disciples in the time of the Buddha.
Yeah.
And how they just had to go to the Buddha, listen to a talk or something like that.
Yeah.
And then wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Wham bam. He said the Buddha has said he saw a nest of worms one day, and he said, "Where at the end of my sasana, they will just be becoming a worm."
What does sasana mean?
Sasana is the teachings of the Buddha, the
duration,
the time.
Or we could have been that person who was listening to the Buddha, you know, pulling the branch of a tree and one was gazing at the stars. And even in the Buddha's time, right, there were people who had
fulfilled the Brahmi already,
they've done it when they were young, they would have been arahants. When they're middle aged, they would have been, you know, once returners. Because they didn't put in the energy, they weren't interested. Yeah, so it's strange, yeah? Even though they had the paramis, why were they not attracted to the Dharma?
This is strange, yeah?
Isn't it the case, I've read that if someone is an arahant, or a stream enterer, they're not going to tell anyone anymore. You're not going to know.
Catch 22, yes, I find what Sarah was saying
very helpful with the persistence, because I've realized that for myself. There are so many talks out there, and there was a time where I would listen to a lot of different things, and you listen to a talk, but you don't really hear as much as really was said there, so you just pick some things out, and then you listen to another teacher, and then it starts to get confusing. So I think that's one of the danger, because we have so many teachings out there. So I've also tried it the other way around, and we had Rains Retreat talks by Ajahn Brahm, and I would just keep listening again and again and again and again. And I would hear new things. And it would get deeper and deeper. And that's what I heard from Sayadaw, that there was a question from his teacher, for example. He would say, go and check. And he would have it at the back of his mind. And
do it
just dig, 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 dig. And then find the water eventually, instead of digging here and digging there and digging somewhere else and not getting deep.
ตัวเนี่ยไอ้ persistence ตัวตัวดิมาแล้วตัวกองลงช่ามาทําอยู่อ่ะนี่ไอ้ช่ามาทําคือคอนฟิวส์ไปเจอกูอ่ะตะคู่หน้าทําอยู่กองลงจ่าတာบ่รู้แหละกูอ่ะกูใจแต่ตะคู่ๆอยู่เองแต่ว่าโหน้อตะမျိုးแล้วทุกขันษาผู้แหละอุมาดิมาวาวาวินอาจารย์บราเมตเตียริโหไปทักขะทักขะทักขะทักขะนาတော့ทักขะนาတော့ดีเตียมั้ยเนาะปู่ๆเนี่ยปู่ๆเนี่ยปู่ๆตะบอปอดปู่ๆเนี่ยเนี่ยติเลย
Familiarity.
Yes, familiarity. Santa calls it familiarity. I don't know if you have a better word for it. It's not just familiarity, intimacy. You know, you get so close to that subject because you study it over and over and over again, whether it's awareness of whatever or you know, listening to a Dhamma talk and taking more and more information of it from it to apply to your practice. When you get so close to it, that's when you know everything possible about it. You become skillful. He says, anybody plays games here? Then you really know. He said, because when you play a game, you go through level one again and again and again until you're skillful enough to go to level two. By that time, you know what's coming. Right? Yeah. Because you play over and over again, you become more and more skillful.
I want to know what the translation of chaka 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 is.
Again.
I heard so many times on the talk, so I was wondering.
You're laughing.
No,
I'm not.
Chaka chaka chaka.
Yes. He said if you read the suttas, almost at the end of everything that's taught, it says, Pamyava, cultivate this again and again, numerous times, you know, abundantly, things like that, you know. The Buddha would expound some verse or something, and then, you know, if somebody's understood whatever, then he'd say, please cultivate this understanding, yeah? You've understood. Cultivate this understanding over and over again, you abundantly, etc.
Yes, Bhavita Bhulikata. Yes.
Bhavita
Bhulikata.
Bhavita
Bhulikata.
Bhavita
Bhulikata. Bhavita
Bhulikata. There's quite a respectable catalogue that's out called Does the Buddha Wear a Walkman?
Does the Buddha wear a Walkman?
Does the Buddha wear a Walkman? It's about, as far as I can see, it's about altered states of consciousness that are for sale or available in various institutions in America.
Yes.
Before we knock it completely, though, and say it's typically American, Berkeley University, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, there are various august authorities that are respected. They put all these things.
Yeah.
There's one interesting course called How to Meditate Like a Zen Monk.
Yes.
You've seen that one?
Yeah.
In about a couple of weeks.
Yes.
The point I want to make is that there seems to be a very good approach, and that is to have therapy beforehand, before one goes into this sort of thing. And knock a lot of stuff, you know, get the edges worn down a bit. Another research project was about different types of food that helped. Another approach was about listening to different sorts of music, Mozart, I gather. But what is the feeling about these sorts of ancillaries that are available to be used before you sort of go into retreat?
America, the altered states of consciousness are sick. Achini, not a miogo, Yama, and the Rulo Pere, who's in a Sanji Valley, who alpha wave to Maroni, Mamila, you know, hello, you're ready. Error to Rua, to Sindara Bolly, Takatli, Dario, Sanji, Le, Macaula, Uma, Sakama Wing, Dario, Toncha, bro, Sandy Yang Loro, Nabro, to Chuharia, who Mamimu, Matin Budalo, Amini Yang Loro. I mean, Yes, there are so many methods of bringing some peace to the mind. There are many, you know, ways to bring some calm to the mind or peace to the mind. He says, but they're external tools. The power to bring peace to your mind that comes from within the mind itself is the most powerful because it's always available. Sorry. Yeah?
Isn't there though this basic stuff to get through first?
Yeah.
You know, to get all the crap that's there that we can work on.
Yeah.
Denial,
yeah.
Compulsive disorders and things like that,
yeah.
that we can work on first, and then go to
meditation. Compulsive disorder, If it's possible, why not? If it helps, why not?
Because the Buddha's good, Dana seen the Baba, and I wasn't it. So
sorry?
The Buddha sort of suggested going Dana seen the Baba, going to the Baba now. Tradition is this. That's why now, and just before you go into Baba now, people actually practice Dana.
When all of us, when any of us speak in this room, he says the rest of us are listening. Are we listening and aware, or are we just listening? Good question.
Listening and contemplating?
Thinking about. But do you know you're doing that? Do you? No, whether you're listening or whether you might be contemplating what you're thinking about what you hear. Or are we just completely involved in activity?
Don't you think about your attitude when a question gets asked?
Yeah.
And do you think about your attitude when someone asks a question or says something?
Cool.
It's a natural inclination to look at your own attitude when someone is saying it, when everyone is saying
things.
So, yeah, I'm looking at my
attitude. It should always be together, knowing our own state of mind and
ourselves.
When you have a habit of doing it, then it's easy. Because it just comes naturally. We are so used to focusing upwards. When we put energy into we've done this our whole life, so it's quite a strong habit. You know, we put all our energy into the outside, and we're not used to noticing ourselves.
And advice beta. Me now tibi machiba. Jani now tibi ma nata.
Me now tibi machiba. Jani now
tibi ma nata.
So Seattle likes to say, know that you're seeing before you look, know that you're hearing before you listen.
time we can't sleep, when we go back to the room, the mind keeps on contemplating, going through, and
yeah,
looking
at the room.
Just recognize
them.
Just recognize them. Not difficult. You just forget to be aware. We can do whatever we like, we can say whatever we like, think whatever we like. Just recognize that.
How much trying should there be trying to be aware?
How much trying should there be?
Sometimes we are just aware.
Yes.
And it's very easy. And but there must be some inclination of the mind, there must be some effort. How much trying should there be for being aware?
Just
as much as you can.
Moment to moment. Moment to moment.
And then you'll find out how much is helpful.
Always. Moment to moment. Tuning of yourself. Learn from your experience.
Yeah, you might find it too much, then you've got to learn to decrease it too little.
Never to put your team. Say put your team.
Yeah. Until you gain momentum. It gains momentum.
Okay, what time is it?
What time is it?
You know, I know we talked about the depressing news that the defilements are overwhelming. can I talk about the you know, can we just switch a little bit to the good news that everybody is here practicing, and that there are sort of signs of development, and just as like smoke leads to a fire, you know, we can say that the kalises are burning, but at least coming down to knowing these things is very important. And that I don't know, when I look back on my own life, like it, maybe not day by day or week by week, but you know, certainly year by year, I see kind of like that I generally am more stable or more happy, or I'm happy to do certain things, like live like as I do in a forest, or I live a shared life with a community of people, or you know, I'm content with basically one meal a day and so forth. So these are kind of signs even that the Buddha would say were quite skillful and good things to develop. Or, I mean, maybe in other people's lives they can also reflect the benefits that they've gotten out of the practice and see that these are good things to have, and that this is a kind of a signal leading towards this Sotapanna Buddha and Arahantship and all the rest. He said, there is good news. The defilements, they're at the limit of their power already. But the wholesome, the kusala, there's room for them to grow.
Akusala
is, you know, they've done, they're all there at their maximum, and there's nothing more, there's no space for them to
grow.
So if there's any wisdom that grows that can challenge the defilement will have to abdicate. The wholesome always wins the unwholesome, eventually.
Just a personal comment. I've always been grateful that the stage in my life that I've been to have the good fortune, good cause and condition to be able to know of the Dharma, to know of this Buddhism, this religion and its teachings. And ever since I've learned the Dharma, I still have a lot of work to put in, but at least I've been able to be fortunate to have given the start. So every day I'm grateful for this cause and condition that has occurred in me. I think if we take this good feeling with us, then we can
not be depressed. We can feel good. To sinji ne wa tu wa tu. To payatia ne di wa ma tiya rao tu jesu te ne. Di wa ma miyang malokhe bewe me ho di ati yao da, di asashi dao tu jesu te ne. Ela nebe miyang seka.
I think in today's terms, as we can see, there's a lot of strife out there. There's a lot of trouble in our countries with other religions.
Yes. He says, as little as we practice, that's the little bit of peace we'll get. And as much as we practice, that's as much peace as we will get, or wisdom.
Wait,
he wants to tell you something about hope.
But
there is hope. There's some way he expressed it before, and he can't quite remember what he said.
Sometimes when we hear the news and we see the news, the fighting, the people throwing stones at each other and killing each other, I think you sort of wish somehow that they too would have the good fortune to be able to receive the Dharma or
teachings. The child time period, my whole about the machine of Jalkane, Chinian Pit, Daru, Tataru, me, and then through the Diana Lucia nine mess in Kama, well, through the suit of me.
I took another one.
Yes. To each his own, we all come with our own.
Forget the Wawana, you are Max Pima, Max Pima, yeah. Bruno.
Nature is that natural law that the mind gets what it deserves. So you have to work to make the mind deserve better. So see love. And there's momentum. When you do more and more wholesome things, he says, then the desire to continue to do more and more wholesome grows. So then it feeds itself, and more wholesome then arises in the mind. He says, as we practice, it will come out of us within ourselves. He says, when he began practicing at home, he didn't believe that, you know, the practice could take him this far. He just kept doing it, and then, you know, at some point, a spark, you know, a moment of an epiphany, and then he kept going, and you know, it brought him. So he says, the practice will bring it to all of us. So just have to keep going. Mm. He says we all have the potential. That's what he says. And that's why we're all practicing so hard, actually.
Sorry, I'd like to share one unusual experience I had recently. I was teaching Brahma Viharas all weekend, you see? So really like all weekend. And then I had to get on a plane back from Singapore down to Perth. And when I was getting on the plane, there was a whole group of, they looked like mercenaries. And they were coming down for a training exercise, and they all had these like green t-shirts that said Art of War on their t-shirts. I'm very serious. And then they weren't young men at all. These were like in the 30s and 40s.
Crazy.
No. These were very neat, clean, tidy, very fit, strong, tall. Mm-hmm. And they were extremely professional-looking people. Like, these were mercenaries or something like this. They were not usual soldiers at all. And I remember I just was looking at them and I felt so sad. I really felt extremely sad, and it was almost like my mind had separated from that, in the sense that I was looking at them and I went, I don't know why I feel so sad seeing these people. And I mean, the only way I can recognize it is just that my mind has separated away from there.
Private by PP, soya by PP, through Tata training paper, alumio,
No, but it's still a heavy feeling. Like you just when you see people, like I was trying to understand why my mind was like that. Just everything, how they moved, how they were walking, because they were in the airport and then they got on the same plane as I was on. So I had a long time, and I was just very. I wasn't. Looking around or scanning or something like that, but just this, I didn't even want to look at them or something like that, but just but when I reflected on it, there was also compassion. I just went, what a loss, what a disaster.
But don't you think other people on the plane would have seen the irony too of seeing a Buddhist
compassion
monk?
Compassion.
No, I'm saying that not.
But I think that's why it's important that we are symbols.
Yeah, that symbols.
Compassion is dollar ne kaka mi pare.
Compassion is always mixed with dosa, and so that's the heavy feeling, is the dosa bit, the bit that feels the loss, and all that is the dosa.
But I didn't have the dosa in the sense of like striking against.
No, dosa is everything from very angry to very dosa is the.
A sense of sad. There was a sense of sadness in the sense that, like, you know, here are these people who have very skillful looking people.
And don't you think other people would say, well, that you're a sense of hope? You know?
He says, who knows how they use other people in their lives, so now they're getting used.
But I'm just saying, what's interesting is that the mind, that my own mind had separated.
What do you mean by separated?
Looking at it, like, I'm sure other people might have admired them because they're physically fit and strong, or they weren't obviously threatening kind of people, but you were definitely not messing around with these guys. And, you know, they just said it was something so unsaid in their posture.
Yeah.
And their
saying.
You know, my conditioning, you grow up watching television, this hero kind of, you know, the action hero guy. I don't have that mind. I see these and I just go, oh no. Anyway. Sorry? I wasn't terribly sad. But somehow that I know.
Yeah, I do that. because I not do it. But nine
do you all know how to score for table tennis?
Level two.
In table tennis scoring, if the other person loses, you score the point. So you lose twice. If you make the point, you sort of make it twice. In the Dharma, there is no stopping because it's like riding a bike uphill. If you don't step on the pedal, you'll roll downhill. So if you don't keep stepping forward, you're just sliding backward.
Look people, look double, look nango, look nibo. Look down, eh?
Lopiyame. You must get to doing it. Lopiyame. You must know how to do it. Lopiyame. You must be able to do it, and you must be doing it.
Just to come in on what Venerable Uttarakita said, could it be that you felt sad because you assumed that they were going to do something bad? Perhaps they were going to do something good. They were going to protect something, or protect some values, or something like that. So wasn't it that your mind made the wrong assumption?
You assume no sexual.
I wasn't that.
When I was a child, I used to have to look after cattle and cows, and so my father would say, if any of them are sick, you have to watch very carefully. So I had no idea what a sick cow looks like, you see. So what I learned over time was to watch a herd, and if one is moving differently from the rest, it's probably sick, you see. So then I would report this to my father. So when I was at the airport, I have the habit of watching the movements of people and how they all move. So these were not together in a group. They were all separate, maybe one or two together. And how they were moving, you see, it was they're extremely professional. They were actively moving separately, but yet they were a group. They all had the same t-shirts. So how I'm watching them is how I watch animals. And how they're behaving is like stalking without obviously stalking. You see? So these are extremely high mercenaries. They were not nice people. But my feeling is like, what a sad waste. You know, these are really fine-looking men, very fit, very strong, and, you know, just were going the wrong way. You know, why they were doing what they were doing, I don't know.
There's lots of people who would look at the beautiful Bhantes here and say, what a waste.
Somebody looking at you, they have the same thing.
So it brings us to what Sarah just said now. He says, if we feel sad, whether the people who think the Bhantes are sad or not. He says, when we feel sad, there is something out this. Says something this mind is thinking about in the wrong way. Something this mind is not understanding in the right way.
So,
whatever we see or hear, there is a cause and effect that He says, whatever we hear, see, experience, in the end, the question for ourselves should be, what should I do now with myself? We must come back to ourselves.
Might have been the same, different situation, but the same when I see news, you know, as I said earlier, people throwing stones and unrest in the other countries that's happening now. That sense of maybe compassion and one, you know, just wishing that something could be different. So it's a different situation. Perhaps it's the same feeling.
Compassion was your feeling. Karuna, compassion is not pity.
So a wholesome state.
Karuna is a wholesome state. When you feel pure karuna, it feels good.
Say energy account.
The energy of the mind is good.
Or being sort of sadness. But
very gentle.
The sadness has gone to veered into the dosa because of the lack of wisdom.
So
I think yesterday, wasn't it this group where I talked about the 37, what do they call them, the 37
Vinsana,
the Vanchanas. They're pairs of emotions that are very similar to each other and can be mistaken for each other.
Lust and loving kindness.
Yes.
Yeah. Very close.
So they get twisted, and compassion and anger is a very, very common
contentment
one.
And laziness.
And that's indifference and upekkha, indifference and equanimity. Sorry?
Compassion.
Because we always think of anger, dosa, is the word dosa, not anger. We always
but
think of dosa as anger, but dosa is not.
Karuna, but next mind is become anger.
Dosa is the not wanting something to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's aversion, you know. It's very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
So when you feel sad, you don't want it to be this way. That's dosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the not accepting is the dosa. It's very subtle. It's
not
like
the near
enemy.
Yes, the near enemy of the father. That's it.
Appreciation of suffering.
Sorry.
Karuna is the appreciation of suffering when you see suffering.
Appreciation of suffering. Karuna, I don't know what you mean by that.
Recognizing the suffering and the desire to help
is always a part of compassion.
Not to dwell on the negative.
You want to bring relief, but you're not feeling sad for their state. You accept their state and you want to help them.
It can be something very positive.
It is very positive.
Yes, positive. Very, very positive.
The Buddha was the great compassionate one.
We often talk about compassion fatigue amongst health professionals.
Compassion fatigue.
So that's not really the right term because
it's dosa fatigue.
It's because there's an aversion to all this suffering.
It's
overwhelming that I'm going to just go. It's not compassion fatigue.
Psychotherapy madhura compassion fatigue lo kore de gena thura ei chacha ma. So it's the dosa bit that has caused the fatigue. A Vietnamese monk came to the center and he went on the alms round and he saw all the poor villagers and he felt so sad for them. He was so overcome with grief for them. He couldn't meditate. He thought he had so much compassion for them. He felt so sad for them. And he couldn't meditate anymore. In the end he had to take a collection and go and donate the money to the villagers. And then he finally felt satisfied. And then Seattle asked the rest of the Vietnamese, he said, why did he have to do that? Why was he not able to meditate? Who was he trying to relieve? If it was pure compassion, then he would not be so agitated. you would not be so compulsively unaccepting. So there's a lot of unacceptance of their state mixed up in what he was feeling.
So,
so the mind twists and turns us. When we don't have enough wisdom, we have to be careful.
It's so subtle.
It is subtle.
Yeah, right.
At that level, we do need good wisdom to figure it out.
And the language seems to be really important, isn't it? I spent a bit of time now just talking about clarifying the meanings of words.
Compassion and dosa.
Yeah, but all of the whole thing, there's a lot of talk of the meanings of words,
meanings,
which are really
yes.
important, aren't
yes,
they?
You
know, just to get the right
support.
Sense of what we want to talk about. You know, it's not a gross thing, it's a fine
thing. When we see our own minds, we can see those subtle differences.
Yes.
Yes.
The language is important.
Okay.
Okay.